Okay, Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we go. It is, in fact, the 8th day of March 2017. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That's where you go, of course. I say this every evening. This program is live. I said it's the 8th of March 2017, 2 days in a row now. But you go to HeadOnRadioNetwork.com if you'd like to jump into the chat room. And you're more than welcome to do so, where you will be met by Anatole and Larmar and Squeaky and midweek pinch hit utility chat room moderator Steve from Georgia Stan. Okay? And more to come as the evening progresses, I have no doubt. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. It is prayer meeting Wednesday on the Horn. I don't know if we're going. I don't know what we're going to. We may or may not have a whole bunch of prayer meeting stuff because there's other stuff to be dealt with. Not that prayer meeting's not a thing. It's just that we're sort of swamped right now. Thank you, Anatole, and a Klaatu Barada Nikto to you as well. Right? Yeah. This is, of course, a listener-supported broadcast. We made real headway last night in knocking down the fundraising deficit, and I'm proud to say that counting tonight's $200 plus what we had last night, we've got $435 to go in fundraising. And thanks, of course, also to our subscribers. So we need to raise $435 tonight, and to make that all the easier, we have a challenge on the table. Because Shirley's challenge was such a rousing success last night, we have a We Love Shirley challenge on the table this evening, courtesy of Chris in Germany. And consequently, that means that $200 is on the table, and if we can get $200 worth of contributions, well, we will then have knocked out all but $35 of this evening's fundraising, and we will have, in fact, wiped out all of the deficit that was created last week when 3 minutes of 60-mile-an-hour winds took out took out the electrical grid and a substantial chunk of the internet infrastructure of southern West Virginia. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty impressive. Your 200 becomes 400, your 100 becomes 200, your 50 becomes 100, 25, 50, 20, 40, 15, 30, 10, 20, 5, 10, and consequently, these doubling challenges are not to be missed because it's a chance to double double your money.
Uh-huh.
So thank you very kindly to Chris in Germany, and thank you one and all. I will hope in advance that we will actually knock down that fundraising deficit this evening, lickety-split. In order to do that, you just go over to headonradionetwork.com. You click on the tab there that you see that says Contribute. You put in the number you want to put in. Oh, Mr. Soros. Hi, George. You just put in $10,000, okay? Now, you know what, George? Why don't you put in $100,000 and we'll get this entire operation all the way off the grid and we'll cut the cord to Appalachian Power. How's that sound, Mr. Soros? Could you do that? Could you be a mensch and do that? Yeah, I know. If you'd like to become a monthly subscriber, and we welcome them, we really, really do welcome them, all you have to do is click that little box that says make this a recurring monthly donation. And every every month, whatever you put in that box will just be automatically sent to the horn. And you will be part of the big reason that we fill in gaps where gaps happen. And again, our subscribers literally saved our lives over the course of the last week or so. So we welcome that as well. Absolutely. All right. So like I said, we've got a lot of stuff to get after this evening. Had a lot of nice messages. Welcoming me back and whatnot. So, thank you for those. And we'll see where the evening takes us. Again, a reminder, while we are still running on metered bandwidth via our cellular carrier, brutally expensive metered bandwidth, I might add, there will be no rerun stream for the horn. I usually run a rerun stream of the past 24 hours after the live program ends. And when we have Dr. Bill, who will be back next Monday, by the way, knowing that we were running on metered bandwidth, Dr. Bill just took a powder on the week so that we could maybe not go broke. But he'll be back next Monday because, by God, please, by next Monday, let the unmetered bandwidth be fixed. Pretty please, sweet baby Jeebus, flying spaghetti monster, what have you. Yeah. But there's also no... There's no rerun stream. Because if I tried to run a 24/7 rerun stream, we would be brokered in the Ten Commandments trying to do it on this metered bandwidth, which is awesome bandwidth. I wish I could get this bandwidth from Frontier. I can't. From Frontier, I get 10 down and 1 up. This metered bandwidth is 30 down and 10 or 15 up. I mean, it's blazing. The downside is that it is, in fact, you know, metered. Yeah, so, yeah, hang in there. The rerun stream will be back as soon as possible. Okay, then. This being... This being prayer meeting Wednesday. Prayer meeting Wednesday is a tradition here at the Horn. And thus, I don't think it would be appropriate for us to let Comrade Kumquat steal that from us, even though every day comes with its own new set of horrors. It is International Women's Day. That's a thing that comes around every year. And women who could not absent themselves from work today wore red, and their allies wore red in support. And along the way, as many people noted, Donald J. Trump, the Clementine Caligula, started a day with a tweet that he obviously didn't write because it was plumb chock-a-block with three-syllable words and no exclamation points and no sad or bad or good or sick. None of that was in there. So, let's celebrate the contribution of women to society and the world, yada, yada, yada. So I thought it might be appropriate, before we get into the meat of prayer meeting Wednesday, to share some of the ways that Donald Trump has celebrated women in the past. Let's try 2015 during the primary season. Look at that face. Would anyone vote for that? Can you imagine that? The face of our next president? I mean, she's a woman, and I'm not supposed to say bad things. But really, folks, come on. Are we serious? Now, to be fair, he was not talking about the devil in that regard. He was talking about Carly Fiorina. Then back in 2012 via Twitter, he was talking about Arianna Huffington, and he said, she's unattractive both inside and out. I fully understand why her former husband left her for a man. He made a good decision. Celebrating the contributions of women in the world today. Back in last year, 2016, now, somebody who a lot of people don't give credit to, but in actuality is really beautiful, is Paris Hilton. I've known Paris Hilton from the time she's 12. Her parents are friends of mine. And the first time I saw her, she walked into the room and I said, "Who the hell is that?" Then in a leaked recording back in 1992, looking at a 10-year-old girl, Donald Trump said, "I'm going to be dating her in 10 years. Can you believe it?" And for all we know, he was. And his How to Get Rich book, he said, "All of the women on The Apprentice flirted with me, consciously or unconsciously. That's to be expected." It's also problematic when you're convinced in the monumental spaces of your own sick ego that every woman is flirting with you. Well, that opens up every woman to be, grabbed by the... Right. Exactly. Let's see, 2015 on Twitter, celebrating women in the world. "If Hillary Clinton can't satisfy her husband, what makes her think she can satisfy America?" What kind of commentary do you offer on that? I got nothing. It's just sick. It's just disgusting. Then, of course, on The View, March 6, 2006, he made this famous observation about his own daughter. She does have Ivanka, and not that other one who nobody knows her name. "She does have a very nice figure. I've said if Ivanka weren't my daughter, perhaps I'd be dating her. This is probably about the same time that he's having the picture of her and him together taken, standing in front of a concrete sculpture of two parrots copulating. Mm-hmm. Back in 2011, talking about malaria, or melanoma, Melania, he said, she's not giving me 100%. She's giving me 84%, and 16% is going towards taking care of children. Well, now, those are some well-cared-for children, I guess. 16%. I mean, and I presume most of that was the little one, Baron. And he gets 16% of malaria. On Primetime Live on ABC, March 10th, 1994, he celebrated women by saying, I've really given a lot of women a great opportunity. Unfortunately, after they are a star, the fun is over for me. Then there's New York Magazine, November 9th, 1992. You have to treat them like shit. And the classic. Rosie's a loser. A real loser. I look forward to taking lots of money from my nice, fat little Rosie. Mm-hmm. And then by way of excusing rape in the military, on the 7th of May, 2013, the Tangerine Tiberius said, 26,000 unreported sexual assaults in the military, only 238 convictions. What did these geniuses expect when they put women and men together? You know, because women just can't help getting raped when they're around men, because men can't help getting all rapey when they're around women. That's a beautiful thing. I mean, that really captures the essence of celebrating women's place in society. In 1997, The Art of the Comeback. Women are really a lot different than portrayed. They are far worse than men, far more aggressive. On the Howard Stern Show in 2003, he said, you know who's really one of the great beauties of the world, according to everybody? And I helped create her, Ivanka, my daughter Ivanka. She's 6 feet tall. She's got the best body. She made a lot of money as a model, a tremendous amount. Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States of America. Oh, but by the way, everybody knows by now that we're spending something like $30 million so that melanoma can live in that tacky-ass tower, in that tacky-ass penthouse in New York, so that she doesn't actually have to go down to Washington, D.C. and lay down in the same bed with that festering pustule and feel his tiny hands just wandering and groping and squeezing and pinching all over her. Me, I don't have a lot of sympathy for her, because I remember when she went on television to say that Barack Obama was born in Kenya, is Muslim, is just like husband says. Mm-hmm. So I don't, you know, no. No. But still, we're spending 30, it costs you, it costs me, $30 million for her to live in New York City to keep the Donald's hands off of her for as long as she possibly can. Well, you have to look at something like that in context. A memo came out from the Department of the Army under the signature of Stephen K. Eitan, Colonel of the Adjutant General Commanding. Memorandum for Child, Youth, and School Services Patrons. Subject: hourly and part-day child care and child enrollments at the Child Development Center. This is out of Fort Knox, Kentucky. It was dated a little less than a month ago. Due to the hiring freeze enacted by the President of the United States on 22 January 2017, child care at the Child Development Center has been adversely affected. We are prevented from bringing new caregivers on board, but are still having our usual staff turnover and illnesses, which create challenges to maintaining ratios and providing quality child care. Because this is one of those things that goes with running a modern military, taking care of the service members, young'uns. Daycare. Effective immediately, no new children will be enrolled in the CDC, the Child Development Center. If full-day child care vacancies become available, spaces will be filled from the wait list based on the priority level. Also, effective 27 February 2017, the CDC will no longer accommodate child care for our hourly care and part-day families until further notice. We regret we cannot provide child care at this time for your children, but we must meet the mission of retention, readiness, and resiliency for our full-day families, as well as provide the highest level of care the Army requires. It is our hope the hiring freeze ends and we're able to bring new employees on board. When we return to a steady state, these services will be restored. Got it? Yeah. But we have tens of millions of dollars to pay for that waxy, pustulant, adipose ball of insecurities to run away and play golf most every weekend down at his tacky pile of bricks in Florida. See how it works? Yeah, this goes back to a line from Hemingway's A Movable Feast, where Scott Fitzgerald allegedly tells Hemingway, "The rich are very different from you and me." Yeah. The rich stay in tacky penthouses in New York to keep their broke-ass fraud merchant husbands from LARPing and groping. And there he was, a-rutting on my melanoma. Right. Precisely. So, you know, just a quick check-in. For this International Women's Day, the 8th of March, 2017. Thank you very kindly to Keith and to Charlene and Colin. We are now only $90 away from meeting from meeting the goal, and only and $55 away from meeting Chris's We Love Shirley challenge. Yes. So thank you very kindly. That's gonna be a big deal when we wipe out that the entirety of that deficit. Pretty impressive. $90 and $55. $55 to wipe out the challenge, $90 to wipe out the deficit. But, brethren and sistren, it is, in fact, the middle of the week. It is, in fact, Wednesday. It is, in fact, Downhill to Friday. Brethren and sistren, that means it is, in fact, prayer meeting Wednesday on the horn. And I want you to know, that even though I talked about some other stuff first, I just wanted to get that, you know, dealt with. I want you to know we had a magnificent meal down in the fellowship hall. Little old blue-haired ladies outdid themselves. I think they can feel the sap beginning to rise, what with the onset of spring, a scarce 12 days away. Mm-hmm. It was Italian night in the fellowship hall. Little old blue-haired ladies whipped up a few trays of homemade lasagna and baked spaghetti. And there was some baked ziti. And there was fresh garlic bread. Oh, mercy sakes. Yeah, I heard the hum. I heard the hum of the KitchenAid with the dough hook on it, sitting there just working that dough for them to make the fresh garlic bread. And hoo-wee! Mm-hmm. Worked up a big old bowl of salad with some Italian dressing, of course. Understand that's all we had, though, because funds have been low coming into the Cathedral of Common Sense. That meant that dessert kind of took a beating. There was no dessert. The deacons were somewhere approaching riot over that, but they just had to get over it. Hope y'all was hungry, and you was, because I mean to tell you, there wasn't much left over, and that's a shame, because one of my favorite things to do is to take that baked spaghetti the next day when it's cold out of the fridge, heat up an iron skillet, and put that baked spaghetti in there and break it up real good, and put a little water to it just to kind of bring it back to life and heat it up that way. And oh my goodness gracious, it was good. So even though there was no dessert and just a little salad, still, when it was all over, the deacons did trundle their massive bulk up a couple of flights of stairs and out into the parking lot where they commenced to chain smoking with the sinners. Mm-hmm. There's a bus station on one side of the Cathedral of Common Sense and a strip joint on the other, so there's always plenty of sinners to smoke with. But sure enough, in short order, Sister Carol Baker showed up with the solar-powered cattle prod, and one good crackling wave of that son of a gun. And I mean, the deacons grew wings on their chubby little heels, and they blew through that door right past Sister Carol, through the vestibule, past that bowl of desiccating butter mints, right down the center aisle. And brethren and sistren, they're waiting right here, right now, waiting for me to give the word so they can pass them heavy brass offering plates with the little PayPal button in the bottom of them. And the velvet, so that the change won't tinkle and ding. And so the folding money, it won't scratch or fly away, it tends to kind of get Velcro-y against the velvet. So, brethren and sisters, we will call up the minister of music to lead us in the offertory hymn as the plate gets passed. Remember, brethren and sisters, with every head bowed and every eye closed, except the one that you keep kind of scrunched open so that you don't get cronked in the noggin with that heavy brass plate. Just take it and pass it and take it and pass it. And all we got to do, brethren and sisters, is come up with $90. And the deficit is whooped. Pretty inspiring, isn't it? I thought so. So, brother minister of music, if you would, please.
And he said, it's time for you to leave behind the things of this world. The fine houses, the fancy cars, the flashy clothes, because we are all naked in the eyes of the Lord.
Stop! This man is clinically insane!
Ladies and gentlemen, in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, let me hear you say, Amen.
Amen.
Let me hear you say, Praise the Lord.
Praise the Lord.
Let me hear you say, I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around.
I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little plate when it comes around.
And it's all tax-free. Hallelujah.
Hallelujah.
Praise the Lord for all the cash I've got. Praise Him for my Rolls Royce and my yacht. Serving God ain't hard with a credit card. Jesus died so I could make a lot. Praise the Lord, He's made us millionaires. Wave your donations in the air. We've replaced our hymns with ATMs, and soon we'll charge a fee on every prayer. Jesus Christ was a poor man, don't you know? He should have used our accountants for his cash flow. Stop the Sermon on the Mount, he should have had a bank account. 2,000 years with interest, he'd be rolling in the dough. Praise the Lord, this song's out on CD, just $40.95 plus GST. Hallelujah, plenty of moolah, solid gold baubles on my Christmas tree. I've got all of heaven's riches, thanks to all you stupid bitches. Praise the Lord for modern Christianity. Whoever said religion should be free?
Oh, mersey dotes and dozy dotes and little lambsy divey, a kiddly divey too, wouldn't you? I love you. Welcome, brethren and sister, and hark, glory to Prayer Meeting Wednesday. I'm a calling on you right now. Hark, glory. To get up out of your seats and onto your feet and kind of wiggle and scrunch and squitch and do what you got to get, because the damn pews are too close together. But get on out into that center aisle and come on down that blood red aisle and fall, brethren and sisters, upon your knees at the altar and lay, ha, glory, your hands upon the subwoofer. Oh, amen. And feel the healing rays of common sense a-flowing through you from the server on high. I am Archpope, Uber Rabbi, Ultimate Imam, Animated Animist, Antagonized Agnostic, Vicarious Vicar, Maximum Metropolitan Bob Kincaid. And this here is Prayer Meeting Wednesday. On the horn. Amen and amen. Oh, brethren and sisters, I tell you what, We have got, we have, as usual, many, many tales of heroic Christian faith in action to share with you today. Brother and sister, and you may remember a couple of prayer meetings back, we explored the revelatory words of Dave Daubenmar, who always does his weird little video cast in front of a backdrop of an empty stadium and wears a baseball cap with a red cross on a blue hat. I don't know if he's God's third base coach or what, but you may recall that Dave Daubenmeyer back then said that he sent two of his precious lumpkin daughters off to college where they did not turn into lesbian softball players because they did not have short hair and big bottoms. Mm-hmm. Amen, brother and sister, and that's what he said. And he also went on to say, or scream, I should note, that relationships between two women or two men, it's not natural. Well, we're into the month of March. And Dave Daubenmeyer is mad. You'll see what I did there in a minute. Mad at Maddo.
Mm-hmm.
He is wroth with Rachel. Oh, I am the alliterative one, am I not? Well, you'll see what I mean. Here we go. Oh, hockey puck warning. I mean, it's prayer meeting Wednesday. I always assume that the hockey puck warning comes sort of as read on prayer meeting Wednesday. But if you're new to the program, you might get a big bite. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Here we go. Strap in.
So I ain't some old corn poke. You can think that if you want to. I'll match my degrees with yours. I'll be glad. I'd love to get on there with that man, woman, man. What's her name? What on MSNBC? Matt, I'd love to get on with that dude.
Isn't he just full of the loving kindness of Christ Jesus? That dude, Rachel Maddow. Uh-huh. And he'll go toe-to-toe, degree for degree with you, because he's not some corn poke. I'm thinking there might be something a little teeny tiny bit goddess of irony-ish about it. Corn poke? I mean, I'm pretty well schooled in the vocabulary of hillbilly and redneck and cracker ass. Corn poke, but he wants to, because the goddess of irony is a good goddess, get on there with that dude, Maddo. This guy is so, the goddess of irony is so going to bust him one of these evenings. He's going to be in an abandoned Sears parking lot trying to pick up a rent boy. And I don't know how we'll celebrate, but I think we'll have to. Don't you agree?
Hey, Matt Al. Hey, Rachel, you listening? I'm supposed to take advice from old corn poke. You think that?
No, she's not listening, Dave. She has a life. No, the only ones that are listening are those of us who are staring in wide-eyed horror at the monumental stupidity that is your entire existence, and having a right good sporting laugh along the way, I might add.
Listening, I'm supposed to take advice from you, and you don't even know that you're supposed to love a man? You don't even have that figured out, yet you're supposed to give me advice about the world? You're telling me that you're on MSNBC, and you're giving advice to the world, and you don't even know who you're supposed to love? Are you kidding me? You don't even know how plumbing works? You got to be kidding me, right? And that you're the smart one, and I'm the dumb one?
Yeah, pretty much. Plumbing? I think she probably does know how plumbing works. Plumbing? I mean, when we talk about plumbing in a human context, that generally refers to waste elimination. Makes you wonder where it is he wants to get on Rachel Maddow and what he's got in mind. And I think Michael in Madison is onto something when he writes, subject line, cornpoke, paging Dr. Freud, cornpoke, that is butt sex, which apparently he wants to have with Rachel Maddow because Jesus. I wish I was making this stuff up. I wish this was just some sort of fun fooling around that we do every Wednesday, but no, this is real.
Yeah, tell me I'm wrong here, right?
No. I mean, you're wrong, but you're also stupid. Really, really stupid. You remember when note coming in from Jen in Australia. Yeah, Maddow knows her plumbing. She was a handy person while she was building up her career. That's how she met her wife, actually. Well, I didn't know that. Makes all the more sense now. You remember, what was it? During the 2012 elections, that Ted Nugent declared that if Barack Obama was reelected, he would be dead or in jail in 4 years. Well, Ted Nugent, sad to say, is still wandering around free as a bird. You know, turkey buzzard. Something that preys on dead, rotting flesh. And, you know, that's your Ted Nugent. And somehow or another, I guess Barack Obama was so busy with all those wiretaps for Trump Tower that he never got around to taking away Ted Nugent's guns or putting him in one of his FEMA camps or something like that. But nonetheless, that trope still has a certain magnetism to it over in the wacky right wing. Enter from the 1st Congressional District of Texas, Louis Asparagus Gohmert. And again, I've been thinking about this since I mentioned it last night. I think about some of these things, and I think it's true. Whenever you have an asshole in the Congress or in any elected position, I think we need to come to terms with the fact that he or she, in the case of, say, Dianne Black or who's that other one in Tennessee, whatever her name is. You know, the one, goodness, her, were sent to Congress by other assholes. Because you can't vote for that person knowing what that person says and thinks and not be an asshole at the same time. So courtesy of a whole bunch of assholes in the 1st Congressional District of Texas, we find out that the I'd be in jail trope still has legs, and it is, in fact, transferable. This comes from the Beckerhead radio program, which we don't hear so much from anymore because, well, it's failing fast, so we have to enjoy it while we can.
Good friend of the program and good friend of mine, Louis Gohmert, joins us now. Really, truly one of the good guys in Congress. From the great state of Texas. But Louis, I have to tell you, I was watching the State of the Union and you were practically licking the president's face. that's a fact.
Glenn, you got to understand, you know, that night of the election, I'd already come to grips. You know, the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights says, you know, that the Christians are the biggest hate group threat in America, in essence. And you know, you had Hillary who wants to make it a crime to say anything negative about radical Islam, and Loretta Lynch were in favor of a crime to question man-made global warming.
No, I understand, so, but know, let's not lick the press.
Now, bear in mind, of course, because he's a hard-hitting radio journalist, Glenn Beck was not about to challenge either one of those lies, because since Representative Louis Asparagus Gohmert is a good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, amosexual, fundamentalist Christian, he can just tell any lie he wants to, because that's what good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, amosexual, fundamentalist Christians do. They lie. Hillary Clinton did not want to make it a crime to say radical Islamic fundamentalism or whatever it was that the little bug people that live inside Louis Asparagus Gohmert's brain were making him say. Neither did Loretta Lynch want that. That's just purely, simply, and entirely, you know, a lie, because it's what he does. But still, you'll notice that it was good for a laugh there with the Beckerhead on his sinking ship.
Global warming.
No, I understand, so, but know, let's not lick the president's face.
I told Kathy that night, look, if this I think Trump's got a better chance, they're saying, but if it doesn't go well, I'm probably going to be in jail with him 4 years, because I'm going to be part of the Christian loving group that they say is hateful, up is down, right is wrong. So anyway, so it's just been such a relief.
Yeah, thanks to our good friends over at Right Wing Watch for constantly taking one for the team and catching this stuff. Of course, we should probably remember that the people who are desecrating Jewish cemeteries and calling in bomb threats to Jewish community centers and shooting Sikhs and threatening Muslims and all of that, we should probably recall that most of them, if not all of them, are, you know, Christians. Which means, of course, that they can do whatever evil they wish, and all they have to do is say, "Hey, Jesus, forgive me." And Jesus says, "Well, sure. Hokey dokey." But yeah, there's the "I'm going to be in jail within 4 years" trope all over again. Of course, we don't have to worry about that, about him going to jail now, because, well, because we have Trump for reasons that probably don't bear going into right now. Oh, you know what those reasons are. And then there's our old buddy Rick Wiles. Rick Wiles, you may recall, is crazier than a sprayed roach. Isn't he? He's the one with Gator the dog that barks at the blow-up spiders, right? Yeah.
by the way, Brother Deacon Asa in Far Canada says the image of that Texan goober licking the yam gives me agita. My Yiddish isn't so good. But no, oh no, that was Jen that said that. That was Jen. Yes, and that was accompanied by a great big ew. Yeah, I know. And no, sorry, no one's been eaten by a dinosaur yet, Jen. No, it was Asa who pointed out. He said, "I like to deep fry my day old baked spaghetti." I'm so easily confused. But anyway, Rick Wiles. He's onto something, because you might recall last night I mentioned that a newspaper in Russia reported that witches and sorcerers meet every full moon to chant incantations and cast spells against the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini. And I pointed out that the next full moon will be Sunday, the 12th of March, 2017. So the goal, the Russian newspaper reported, was that the witches and sorcerers, I don't know where the warlocks and wizards are, their goal is to render Donald Trump mute, unable to speak. And apparently Rick Wiles is on that same wavelength. Yes.
Let's talk about right now. What is the Church of God, the body of Christ, what are we facing right now in early 2017?
Well, first of all, we're in a very critical time in America's history, you know, not because of Donald J. Trump, but because of the system that is reeling. He's done more in the first month than most presidents did in 50 years, just rolling forward with everything that he promised. And to watch the people on the left, to watch the people even on the right, the powers that be inside the GOP that are trying to undermine him, I mean, I can promise you, I'm glad I'm not president. There would be people arrested for high treason right as we speak. They'd be arrested because they're undermining America. This is not how America functions. We operate on a peaceful transference of power. When President Obama was elected, he was not my cup of tea. Not that McCain was mine either. Or George Bush, because I understand how the system's all rigged. So, but when Obama got elected,
and, of course, the sparkle ponies go, "Well, hell yeah, system's rigged, DNC, damn it!" Mm-hmm. Yeah, just clearing things up. Yeah, Ken Ham, Jen, just going for a little clarity here. Ken Ham is into the dinos, and Rick Wiles is the inflatable spider guy that Gator the dog barks at because he knows that the inflatable spider at Halloween's full of demons. You know, it's moments like this when you just kind of remember that our country is so screwed. I mean, screwed, blued, and tattooed. Yahooed and ballyhooed. Because, you know, there's every bit of 30% of the, at least, of the people of the United States who go, yeah, there's demons. There's definitely demons. Definitely demons. Drive slow in the driveway. Meanwhile, the angry Indian with a note, "Fuck Ken Ham. Not with yours, angry. Not with yours. Certainly not with mine. But I get your meaning." So let's get back here to the madness and... You know, it's tough. I can't stick the swirly straw in the bottle of cheap tequila these days. And just staring in wide-eyed horror at the monumental terror of it all. Ugh. Makes for some interesting dreams. Mm-hmm. But do continue, fellas. So where were we? Yeah, he didn't like Obama. He didn't like Bush. He didn't like McCain because the system's rigged. And the only real leader America can ever have is Jesus.
Like I said, I didn't ride in the streets and burn cars, and I hear them talking about they're going to do what's called American Spring, the moment the weather changes with millions of people riding. I mean, we are praying against all this stuff. Tomorrow is the day that all the witches are going to curse Trump. There's a whole article I can send it to you where they've actually put the spell, told the people what to do, so they can all cast a spell on Donald Trump. So how is this possible? Never before in recent history or memory can we ever imagine where witches join together to curse a president. Obviously, the hand of God is upon him. You could see even the result.
Does this mean there's a witches union? Do they pay dues? Do they have health care? I'm just wondering. Because we've never seen, and this clown with the accent is a televangelist by the name of Rodney Howard Brown. I don't know how we keep letting him in here, but we do. As Jen points out, yeah, it's tough all over. Jen says, I was just in California, and even there, everybody was just slouched over saying, oh, fuck. Yeah. But you'll notice this clown, Rodney Howard Brown. Clown Brown. Ah, see what I did there? You'll notice he said that he'd never seen anything like a bunch of witches gathering together to cast spells on poor old Marcus Aurelius. But that's the problem. They did. Because, see, you got to understand, and I mean no offense to people who practice some sort of peaceful, Christ-centered, Matthew 25 kind of Christianity. But we need to understand prayer, all prayer, is spell casting. Witches are not the only people who cast spells. Or else that makes everybody who ever said, now I lay me, a witch. Because prayer is an attempt to influence the physical world by supernatural influence. Or supernatural intervention. And that's the very nature of spell casting. And the reason I mention that is because, and we featured it here on the program, I don't know how many times, all those Christians out there during the long tormented reign of peace and, well, relative peace and prosperity, and people being able to go to the doctor when they're sick, of Barack Hussein Obama, the Kenyan Muslim, you slurper. When the Christian pastors shrieked from their pulpits, calling upon their adherents and acolytes and followers and whatnot to engage in what they called imprecatory prayer against Barack Obama, and they cited some verse from either Proverbs or Psalms, in which a prayer was made to let his days be few upon the earth, let his children be orphans, and let his wife die a widow. The Christians were actually praying for the death of the President of the United States. And none of those Christians ever even got so much as a visit from the Secret Service. Now, I don't know about anybody who's part of the resistance who's out there running around going, sure would be nice if that little old Baron Trump could be an orphan and melanoma would be a widow for the rest of her life and die that way. Please, Jesus, make it so, number one. Not aware of it because it's not happening. But because we live in a country where somewhere around 30% of the people herein believe in angels and demons and possession and various spooks and ghouls and hobgoblins, there's an actual market for this trash. And Emery and Marveline are sitting there in their matching Barca loungers going, that's how it is with them liberal witches, Marveline, out there casting spells against that poor old Donald Trump. God bless him. I think we better cast some counter spells. I mean, pray.
In Melbourne the other day when Malone.
Ah, son of a gun, he's another Australian. Look, angry architect, Robert, John, Jen, Graham, would you guys please get on the ball and do something about these Australian televangelists coming over here? It's like some sort of Christo fascist version of the British invasion in the early 1960s. Only you can't dance to it, and it doesn't have a nice beat. Son of a. What's going on down there? Is the market not big enough? Has Hillsong got everything locked down? And there's just no room for a tent revivalist if they got to come to America? Rodney Howard Brown. That's Howard hyphen Brownie, Browne. It's down in Melbourne. Let's find out what happened down in Melbourne.
On in recent history or memory, can we ever imagine where witches joined together to curse a president? Obviously, the hand of God is upon him. You could see even the result in Melbourne the other day when Melania came out and she prayed the Lord's Prayer. She read it out. I posted on my Facebook. People manifested. They said it was all staged. It was rigged. President Trump didn't even know she was going to pray. And you could hear her voice even breaking as she prayed as she was over.
Okay, maybe he meant Melbourne, Florida. Still, he sounds like he's one of y'all's Australians.
Or by himself.
Rodney, even if it was staged, so what? That tells me that they chose to say the Lord's Prayer. Praise God.
Yeah, but people, even the Christians, are so mean. I've never seen so much meanness. Just full of the devil.
Absolutely. You were talking about the rioting, the protest, and the witches. You know, look, the witches, they gathered together during the campaign and tried to put curses on him, and that didn't work
either.
Correct. God is shielding that man, and none of their witchcraft and sorcery is going to work. But I think what's more dangerous than the protest and the rioting is the seditious acts of people like John McCain and others in the deep state, in the CIA, Lindsey Graham, and, you know, the Republican Party rhinos.
Paul Ryan.
Yes.
Paul Ryan.
That's right. Mm-hmm. What they're doing is seditious.
No, there's no doubt about it. There's no doubt about it.
Ah. Maybe he's... I gotta quit blaming the Aussies for everything. Rodney Howard Brown was born, Scott and Punky tell me, in South Africa. Still, I think this is called for.
the witch may we burn, huh?
Burn
her! Who do you know she is a witch?
She looks like one!
Yeah, she looks like one!
Bring her forward.
I'm not a witch, I'm not a witch.
But you are dressed as one.
They dressed me up like this. And this isn't my nose, it's a false one.
Well?
Well, we did do the nose.
The nose?
And the hat. But she's a witch!
Yeah.
Did you dress her up like this?
No!
Yes.
Yeah, a bit. She has got a wart.
What makes you think she's a witch?
Well, she turned me into a newt.
A newt?
I got better.
Sorry, I just had to wait. That's my favorite line. I got better. Yeah. Witches. 21st century witches. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. I mean, what's left? What do you say? That's just where we are. And there's so much more of this stuff, but we're going to take a powder on it. Because there's other stuff to get into. We've still got catching up to do. Jen in Australia pointing out, don't you worry, Bob, the Australian parliament is riddled with them. Abbott's sidekick was a Christian Taliban witch. They called her his deputy, but she was a witch through and through. Or was she a duck? Or was she made of wood? And therefore, throw her into the pond! Yeah, exactly. So let's take a quick break. And, okay. Steve, a member of the fraternity of Steve, writing in. Subject line, they all sound the same to me. South Africa? Figures, they're even worse. I know. Steve also added, Steve in China. Throw another stake on the babby. I'm actually in favor of World War III at this point. Better than listening to this Aussie clown's South African, damn it. Mindless shit. Problem is, if it comes to a confrontation between China and the U.S., I know the Chinese will just kick me out of the country, but I'll be goddamned if I'm going to live in a crap can like America. Well, we're all kind of just refugees in waiting, aren't we? I have gotten under the skin of Robert in New South Wales. Witches? Really? One, good to have you back. Two, the market for this crap is too small in Australia. Australia's population is only 25 million, so the religious types all head for the USA. It's the reason you got Ken Ham. He said as much. Three, the only religion most Australians follow is football. Australian rules, league, rugby, and drinking beer. Ah, what have I got to do to get a visa? Maybe I could sneak in with my cheesy accent and I wouldn't need one. Just sit around and watch a little footy. Drink a bit of beer. John Fox used to tell me about Happy Goblin Ale. I wonder if that little brewery is still up and running. Yeah, oh my God, I'd forgotten that. We're so screwed. Angry Indian pointing out, you remember the Florida teacher who was fired for wizardry because he did a magic trick in order to explain a scientific experiment? Yeah, I do. Sadly, I do. So anyway, let's take a break. Just a little musical interlude. And then come back to your calls. 304-663-4676 is the stress line, named for the immortal and irrepressible Bill Mr. Stress Miller. 304-574-8178 gets you in on the other line. And Skype to Skype from anywhere on the planet, Bob Kincaid Horn. We've got someone waiting on Skype even as we speak. Please, as the saying goes, stand by. And we'll be back. Prayer Meeting Wednesday. Listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. And I'm Bob Kincaid. Sing it, old blue eyes.
Those fingers in my hair, that sly come hither stare, that strips my conscience bare, it's witchcraft. And I've got no defense for it, the heat is too intense for it. What good would common sense for it do? 'Cause it's witchcraft, wicked witchcraft. And although I know it's strictly taboo, when you arouse the need in me, my heart says yes indeed in me. Proceed with what you're leading me to. It's such an ancient pitch, but one I wouldn't switch, 'cause there's no nicer witch than you. That crazy witchcraft. And although I know it's strictly taboo, when you arouse the need in me, my heart says yes indeed in me. Proceed with what you're leading me to. It's such an ancient pitch, but one that I'd never switch, 'cause there's no nicer witch than you.
And as that great sage Bugs Bunny once noted, yeah, I know, but aren't they all deep down inside? 14 minutes past the hour on this Prayer Meeting Wednesday, the 8th of March, 2017. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. Going right back to the phones in a minute, but I've got a nice piece of correspondence from Paul from Parts Unknown. And I think it encapsulates a whole lot of it speaks to the issue that that has taken up a lot of our time of late. Paul from Parts Unknown writes, "I was glad to hear that you got your power back and finally got an internet connection yesterday. Haven't listened to yesterday's show yet, but I will assume you are behind on fundraising. You assume correctly, Paul. So let me open with a $50 matching challenge, since while the power can be out, the bills are on 24/7. And we are $10 away from meeting, and I'll just add editorially, we are $10 away from meeting Chris's We Love Shirley challenge. And if Paul's challenge is met, we will have wiped out the entire deficit and put us a little bit to the good. So thank you very kindly, Paul, and thank you very much to everybody who's jumped in. Thank you, Brian, jumping in earlier. Much appreciated. Anyway, getting back to his email, Paul from Parts Unknown notes, I'd just like to comment on the disagreement that is going on between the progressive wing and the establishment wing of the Democratic Party, which is also bleeding into the horn community. I believe that I can bring some insight to this because my wife is much more of a moderate progressive than I am, and while we both supported Bernie in the primary, she quickly got behind Hillary Clinton, and I was going to initially vote third party or not at all. From the primary up until about a month before the election, it was a heated debate in our house why Hillary Clinton was or wasn't worth voting for. In the end, I did cast my vote for Hillary Clinton. One of the major tipping points was that if Trump somehow won the election, it didn't seem feasible at the time. Hillary was up like 60% to 40% in all the Nate Silver polls. And didn't we rely on those to our unending mortification? That was me, not Paul from Parts Unknown. And I didn't vote for Clinton, even though we live in a solidly blue state that did go for Clinton in 2016, and my vote really didn't matter. I would never hear the end of it. The one silver lining of the Trump administration for me is that that gamble paid off. Happy wife, happy life. After having all this debate experience, I would like to weigh in on this rift. First of all, berating the sparkle fart unicorn crowd seems a little useless to me. One could argue that if they had gotten in line, Trump would not be president, and you can prove it with math. However, I can also prove that the straw did in fact break the camel's back, but screaming at the straw seems a little insane and unproductive. The real issue is all the weight on the camel's back in the first place. And even if you could fix the straw, another one would come along to break it again in 2020, brought to you by the GOP. And, you know, there's truth in what he says. And I'm just having a hard time getting over the fact that we're in an existential crisis that we don't have to be in. But I guess we're always going to be there. Interesting, from a school from Wesleyan University in Connecticut, I saw some data earlier today. Hillary Clinton lost in the states where she did not run television advertising until the last week of the campaign, to wit, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin. There are multiple layers to why that campaign failed as disastrously as it did. And we'll be a while teasing them all out. But she didn't. She did not run TV ads in Michigan, Wisconsin, or Pennsylvania until the last week of the campaign. And those and even the ads that she did run were not policy oriented. They were all personality based. And I've been trying to strike some sort of a happy medium by understanding, and you know, this is why, look, when I get grief from, you know, the Sparkle Ponies who make one claim, it's hard not to counter with something equally compelling from the other end of the data spectrum. You know, Hillary didn't lose because neoliberal. She lost because she's a terrible campaigner. She lost because she was a terrible candidate. A really bad, no good, terrible candidate. Who was unable to connect with voters. Who had all the personality of sopping wet cardboard. So, you know, that's the balance I'm looking for. Paul from Parts Unknown continues and says, as a mental exercise, sometimes called a thought experiment, I think, I would like to ask, what if all the third and fourth party voters put their support behind Hillary Clinton, but the Republican turnout increased to match it and the outcome was still the same? Basically, who would you blame or kick around if there were no third party or fourth party votes? Hillary Clinton still won the popular vote by 3 million and Trump still took the Electoral College? What does the problem look like if you stop focusing on the straw? I don't have an answer to this question, Bob, but I would really appreciate your thoughts on this. And I'm trying to play fair inside the thought experiment, and we will pretend for a minute that that the libertarians would have, in some parallel universe, in which people's ears are apparently, like, you know, on the top of their head or something, or they're Balchinians or whatever, that libertarians would ever vote for Hillary Clinton. I get that. I'm not entirely sure what the answer to that question is. But by the same token, if you're talking about a camel with a whole bunch of straws on its back, and you put one more straw on, that's the purpose of that cliche. The straw that breaks the camel's back. All the other straws are taken as read. But the camel can bear all those straws. It's the last one that does the critical damage. And that's why I guess I focus on the straw. But I suspect, Paul, that the problem looks like a perfect storm of ineptitude and incompetence. It looks like something that I have said in the past and yet doesn't mollify people, that she never should have even run in 2008. And that having run in 2008 and having been beaten by a black guy whose middle name was Hussein, she should have realized that the handwriting was on the wall and maybe taken a cabinet position in the Obama administration and done that as long as she wanted to, and then gone gracefully into retirement and gone and played with her grandkids or, you know, whatever. I think there is a strong argument to be made that Hillary Clinton is a modern protagonist straight out of ancient Greek tragedy. Remember, there was nothing in particular about Oedipus that, I mean, he wasn't a bad king. He simply had a bunch of shit foisted on him by the gods, and wound up being the one who had to pay the price for it by gouging out his own eyeballs with his wife's brooch, and then wandering the land accursed by people who really, I mean, had no reason to curse him. I mean, my memory is long enough to remember that going as far back as the late 1990s, Rush Limbaugh was broadcasting with one hand under the desk, and never mind half his brain behind his back or the talent on loan from God, with one hand under the desk, he was broadcasting and fantasizing and masturbating over the idea of Hillary Clinton running for president. It really was a 25-year-long assault on that woman. And she did not have enough. Well, I think it made her paranoid. It made her resistant to ideas of transparency. I go back to, you know, again, the observation that I made way back in the spring when people started shrieking about the Goldman Sachs tapes. And I said, listen, you know, she just needs to release them. She has the power to release them herself. You know, just like now we say, hey, Donald Trump as president of the United States has the absolute power to declassify any piece of information that he wants to if he has evidence that Barack Obama wiretapped the goddamn Trump Tower. But you can't declassify that something that does not exist. Well, the Goldman Sachs tapes existed. And my argument way, way, way back in the spring of 2016 was that she needed to release those tapes not because there was anything evil in them, not because there were any cabals of Hillary and Goldman Sachs executives standing around a cauldron muttering boil, boil, toil and trouble and asking when shall we meet again and all of that shit. But because the secrecy surrounding them created its own controversy. And she had an opportunity to take control of the narrative and did not. And therefore, those tapes, those remarks, which way back then I said contained nothing more than her standing before a bunch of Wall Street bankers telling them that they shit, that they each and every one of them shit ice cream that smelled like violets. Because that's what you get $275,000 to say, you know, from a Goldman Sachs, because they're nasty, and they know what they do is nasty. They're predators, and they know they're predators, and so they're willing to pay a cool quarter of $1 million to have somebody who's been important come and tell them that they shit ice cream that smells like violets. And she needed to take control of that narrative, and because she was hidebound, and because she was paranoid, and because, and you know, because 25 years made her that way, she didn't. And it bit her in the ass. So that's what my thoughts are, Paul, relative to looking at the problem if I stop focusing on the straw. There are other, you know, and what we're talking about really is not focusing on not focusing on the straw, but looking at some of the other straws, because they're all straws that commit that wind up contributing to a quantum of failure. There's the fact that the primaries are heavily weighted toward the Deep South, which makes sense for Republicans, but no sense at all for Democrats. And again, I remarked on it. Why in God's name does the Democratic Party let South Carolina and Alabama and Tennessee and Mississippi, none of which states will ever, 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 for the foreseeable future, go for a Democratic nominee, determine early on who the front runner is and who is viable and who is not? And that question still has not been sufficiently answered, at least not to my mind. So to get back around to what Paul from Parts Unknown writes, going forward, the Democrats have to get over their differences and come together. I agree. I think the reason it is so difficult boils down to trust on both sides. The progressives don't trust the establishment because they feel if they unite behind the establishment and give them their support, their issues will not get addressed. And there is historical precedent, I'll add, to believe that. I remember when Rahm Emanuel called progressives in Arkansas retards. Mm-hmm. The feeling is not unfounded due to the cheating that happened during the Democratic primary. Yes, I agree with you that if the DNC had just played it straight, Clinton would have won anyway. More people supported Clinton than Sanders. It's also true that there was some shady shit going on that makes it almost impossible to trust that the establishment will play fair next time, so why give them your support as a progressive? And that's the eternal question about primaries being for passion and general elections being for the cool, ice freaking cold light of reason. Paul continues, the establishment doesn't trust the progressives because they believe they can never be pure enough to satisfy them. From their point of view, all you have to do is watch how the Tea Party destroyed the Republican Party in 6 short years. Yes, they're on top now, but they're looking at a possible annihilation in 2018 and 2020. And Paul, I've heard that, but I'm waiting to see some proof of it. The gerrymandering, the difficulty of getting, they're not going to get destroyed in the Senate, Paul. They're just not. It's impossible, mathematically. So we know there's going to be a Republican Senate. The most we could hope for is to flip enough members of the House to have a Democratic House. Right? Just like in the 1930s, Paul says, they could go from the majority to being a minority party in the House for the next 60 years. All these moderate Democrats are afraid if they let the progressives in the door, they'll be primaried out of office, just like the moderate Republicans in 2012. And I got a little issue with that. I don't think there were any moderate Republicans in 2012, because I remember how those moderate Republicans who were Tea Partied in 2010 and 2012, to the extent they were, I kind of remember how they voted during the Reign of Error under George W. Bush. Paul says the establishment is also afraid if they move to the left, they'll lose more moderate votes than the progressive votes they'll gain. The best solution, Paul says, I can see to heal this rift is to throw your support behind individual party members that support your issues. You may even want to donate to their individual campaigns. Stop donating to the DNC or the DCCC and give to local and state candidates that inspire you. Trust me, they will follow the money. And that's what makes things, and I mentioned this a few nights ago, and it's worth going and looking up, that's what makes things like the Sister District Project so dynamic. And, by the way, in terms of races, there's a special election in Georgia coming up to replace Tom Price. And the Georgia legislature is furiously re-gerrymandering that already gerrymandered district, because they're scared to death that the seat that was held by Tom Price and before that held by Dr. Professor Newton Leroy Gingrich, amateur paleontologist, could conceivably fall to a Democrat in a special election. That's a race worth helping out, because that would send shockwaves. The Democratic challenger is a documentary filmmaker, and I think, among other things, the folks over at Daily Kos, $4 and $5, $2 and $3 at a time, have already raised $1 million for his campaign. So I don't disagree there at all. I would add, however, that if you do not like the way the Democratic Party is behaving, the best and most surefire way to manifest your vision is to A, find out when your local county Democratic committee meets, attend the meetings, and who knows, maybe even screw your courage to the sticking place, again with the Macbeth references, I'm sorry, Scottish play references. Don't say that name. Screw your courage to the sticking place and run for the Democratic Executive Committee. Because then you've got a real chance to make a difference. And I know I mention it too much, but I mean, West Virginia Democrats passed the most progressive platform probably in its history last summer. And yes, Joe Quisling Manchin doesn't give a damn about it, and neither does Jim Kunta Kinte Justice. But it does manifest what the attitudes of the party are going forward. And it is something that candidates can get hold of and talk about. West Virginia is probably a little bit of a different situation because we are in economic freefall. We've got a $500 million deficit. And even though Trump promised to bring back coal, nobody's talking about bringing back the tax on coal. We're just going to let the coal industry destroy the state for free. And so the coal lie will probably continue to shape the discussion and the debate going forward. It makes the job of progressive change in a place like this all the more difficult, but I don't think it is that difficult across the rest of the country. But notice that Paul says the best solution I can see to heal this rift is to throw your support behind individual party members, candidates who support your issues. And I think Paul is saying that there's really nothing, there's really no, and correct me if I'm wrong, Paul, by another email or whatever. In all but the most extreme of cases, there is no, there's nothing to be gained by supporting a third party candidate because they can't win. And meanwhile, I'll add one more thing into the mix. And it is something I'm not seeing any. It's something I've said, a couple of others maybe. But I want a clear statement from Hillary Clinton that she absolutely will not run. I want one of those statements in 2020. I want one of those statements that says, if nominated, I will not campaign. If elected, I will not serve. I want it clear cut, because we are doomed if she runs again in 2020. And I know people, yeah, but what about her age? How many times do I have to say this? In 2020, Hillary Clinton will be younger than Bernie Sanders was when he ran in 2016. Okay? Yeah. So thanks for a very thought-provoking note, Paul. I really do appreciate it, and thank you for the challenge. $50 challenge on the table to augment the We Love Shirley challenge, courtesy of Chris in Germany. And if we do that, we've knocked out the deficit, and we have knocked down fundraising for the entire night. So we've got $50 to go to meet that challenge. Thank you, Paul. Thank you, very kindly, Paul, from parts unknown. You guys just won't let it go, will you? Little note from Kitty in Boston. And I'm going to try to do this with my Boston accent. Subject line, Paul from Parts Unknown. LOL, wow, Bob. Paul sounded wicked sycophanty. Wicked, that's a Boston. Wicked sycophanty calling you out for straw focusing. Andy must be fuming. And a big smiley face. Kitty in Boston. Oh, just when I get the fires banked, I got somebody to come along and stir up the ashes. Here, let me throw a little gunpowder in there for you, Bob. Yeah. Thanks for the sour persimmons, Kitty. All right, let's run over to the Skype line and check in with Scott and Punky. Hey, Scott, what's happening?
Hello, Bob.
How in the world are you?
Sorry. Well, I was a little under the weather, but I think I'll make it.
I know the feeling. I'm still there.
Yeah.
Went and had me a CT scan today.
Ooh. Yeah. Ooh, those are fun.
But I can't afford. We didn't have to do the contrast, so that was a real bonus.
Well, the last one of those I had discovered a brain tumor, so I hope yours worked out better than mine did.
Well, mine was a little weird.
Okay.
There's something about the ambient noise of that CT scanner going, it makes you feel like you're living inside Pink Floyd's Welcome to the Machine.
Or an early version of a computer printer.
And just puts me right to sleep.
Yeah.
So I was dozing off in my CT scanner. And they said, all
nothing
done.
Wrong with that.
And they said, all done. And then they said, hey, could you hang around a minute? There's something kind of weird on your CT scan. And we're going to go, just go out and wait in the waiting area. And we're going to go and ask the radiologist what he thinks. And, you know, they just don't do that.
Yeah, that's always a sphincter-tightening moment.
And I'm standing there going, weird? Weird? What do you mean weird? What? I don't know from weird. And bless her heart, the young woman says, well, I mean, we're not doctors. We can't really tell you anything. We just saw something odd.
See, if I'm faced with something like that, I'll tell the technician, look, you know, have him sit down and point a finger at him and say, look, unless it's a group of Keebler elves inside me somewhere making cookies, I don't want to hear anything more about it, specialist or not. You know, I'm.
Well, in my case, I complied. I was compliant. I was a good patient, and I just went, and Agnes and I sat out in the waiting area and just, you know, sat there until she came back out, and I was expecting the radiologist, because she said, yeah, just sit here. The radiologist will be out to talk with you in a minute. And I was thinking, wait a minute. He's a radiologist because he doesn't want to deal with people in the first place. Okay? And meanwhile, did you ever hear that clip from The Simpsons, Scott, where Homer is trying to buy a great big humongous RV, like the Canyon Arrow or something?
No.
And they run Homer's credit and a siren goes off. And Homer said, is that a good siren? And the salesman says, ah, come on, Homer, did you ever hear of a good siren?
Yeah.
And it's kind of like that when they tell you, you know, there's something odd about your CT scan. You know, there's no good odd. I mean, it's not like they saw something on the CT that, wow, your insides are better than most people's. No. So we sat there and were told that the radiologist would come out, and then the radiologist didn't, and the young woman came back out and said, no. The radiologist said, it's fine. You just need to, your regular physician will call you and tell you what it was or wasn't or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's not like you can fight anybody or throw anything or, you know, stomp around. I mean, it just is what it is. And you walk out going, oh, wonder what that was. And you sort of sit on pins and needles until you get the call, you know, from your primary care physician.
Oh,
I might add has not happened yet.
Oh, well, see, in that instance, there's nothing really left to do except a continuous loop sound of the Jeopardy think piece for Final Jeopardy going over and over in your head, and your imagination running 31 flavors of wild, you know, over what it could be.
Right, and believe me, those 31 flavors of my imagination, I am not into pistachio, peppermint, chip, lemonade, sorbet.
Oh yeah,
and that's where it goes. That's where my mind goes.
Yeah, you see the whole menu board. Jeez.
And meanwhile, well, I've been experiencing, you know, literally gut bending pain.
Yeah,
you know, the kind of stuff that kind of doubles you over and gets you near crying. And this is not by way of, you know, me saying, oh, poor, poor me. It just is what it is. And I'm not going to sit here and lie and say, no, everything's sunny and rosy and wonderful. Well, thank you, Punky. But that's not what you called to talk about.
No, actually, I called to talk about a little bit about witchcraft, okay? But I did want to comment on a couple of things you've said so far, and also I'll start with a flashback to yesterday, and this is only to piss off that particular correspondent. Okay, now bend over and point your southern portion toward the phone. You ready? Okay?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, I planted one, and we'll see whether it was a happy one or a sad one by the end of this call. But anyway, the straw that breaks the camel's back, I tend to look at it, you know, as far as where you put your focus, on something I heard years ago, As you travel through life, no matter what your goal, keep your eye on the donut and not on the hole. And, you know, the thing about...
That's just damn philosophical of you, Scott. I just got to tell you.
Will we make it through all of this so far? Well, I've decided, and this is the only reason I'm as calm as I am, the only way out is through. It could very well be that the very fact that Trump is in charge will be the very thing that'll shift us at some point in the hopefully not too distant future to a future that works for us all. But in order to reach that, we've got to go through this. So keep in mind, the only way out is through. And it'll be hard to remember that. You know, it's that alligators and draining the swamp sort of dynamic. And what was the other thing? Oh, you were talking about the Goldman Sachs speeches and Trump declassifying the supposed wiretap information.
Right.
Hillary and Trump have something very, very much in common. And one of those things is neither of them is made up in the sense of being able to do the right thing. Both of them will do every conceivable other thing that there is to be done before it'll dawn on them, if it ever does, to do the right thing. Okay? So in the case
of... You mean if they do the right thing, it'll be an accident?
It'll either be an accident or it'll be the very last thing that they do. It'll finally dawn on them, well, maybe I should do this after all, if it ever happens. But anyway, I didn't call about that. I called to talk about witchcraft. I had an experience a couple of years ago. I happened to cross paths with a practicing witch from back east somewhere, D.C. area, I think. Who was being interviewed on a radio show.
I know a couple.
Yeah. Okay. So this was like 2 years ago. And at the time, I called in and I said, you know what I would like to see happen? And she said, what's that? And I said, I would really like to manifest using some of these things you're talking about. I would like to make manifest in my drab, wretched life a window air conditioner. Okay, because at that time it was summertime and it was hot as hell. And so she said, well, send me an email. Tell me about it. So I sent her an email and I told her about it. And she sent me, I don't know if it was a spell or an incantation or a ritual or what the hell it was, but she described the steps to do and I did the steps. So that was like in the midsummer of 2015. A couple of months later, I had the occasion to hook up with somebody who needed some assistance on a radio-type project, okay? And my skill set was such that it would be perfect for what that person needed. The problem was they said that they weren't in a position to pay me. And I said, well, that's all right. I don't want any money. I like you. I like what you do, and I'd like to assist you. I said, if you did want to compensate me in any way, you know, it'd be really nifty if you could help me get a window air conditioner. And he said, well, you know, that could be done. We could do that fairly easily. So as the weeks went by, the weather changed because fall had arrived and the heat wasn't a problem. So the window air conditioning system would not be a high priority then. But at the time, as I was going headlong into assisting him with this broadcast project, I found that my ancient computer, 10 years old or more, was not up to the task that I was trying to get it to perform. So I said, well, why don't we do this? Instead of the air conditioner, why don't you arrange to get me a more recent vintage computer so I can assist you more effectively? Okay? And that's what he did. So even though it wasn't what I wanted, it was something that I needed. And if there's a connection between the ritual or the incantation and my having this lovely computer, I don't know. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. I just know that those emails I send you are on this computer. But As far as witches, one of the other things this witch told me about was a book that I ordered called What Witches Do by someone called Stuart Farrar. And I got it, and it's available on Amazon, either in Kindle, hardcover, or paperback. And it's an interesting book that gives you just a basic primer of witchcraft. It's not anywhere near as scary or mysterious as people have been led to believe. So that's my little witchcraft story. Oh, the postscript to it. I did another incantation, which sort of about 2 months ago, which was a variation on the one that she provided me for a couple of things that I was in dire need of, one of which was a funding mechanism for some dental work that has been like years and years necessary, but just hasn't been able to be done. And lo and behold, less than a week ago, I heard that there may well be like a 98% chance of a funding mechanism which will bring that into being. So, again, I don't know if the candle thing and the ritual has anything to do with these outcomes. But, you know, I choose to believe that doing it and being grateful that the results are going to show up at some point leads to something. And
you're taking the Pascal's wager approach to it, in which, the Pascal's wager says, and it's with regard to Christianity, Pascal's wager says, yeah, well, you know, if it's fake, it does you no harm. And if it's real, you've saved your soul for all eternity. So why not?
Well, yeah, it's like a case literally of, well, I don't know if it did, but then again, I can't prove that it didn't. All I know is I got this computer here, and pretty soon I'll be able to get my choppers taken care of.
Yeah.
You know, and also be able to help worthy efforts like, oh, I don't know, maybe the horn. Okay. So it all works out, and to the extent that I can continue to be grateful and optimistic and share the wealth, so to speak, so be it. I mean, that's what more in life do you really need?
Between that and a chatty cockatiel, not much.
Well, yeah. And as far as making Trump mute, that might make it quiet, but that may not be the solution, okay? That's why I was saying perhaps it's a good thing on some level that he's in the position that he's in, because it may well turn out that his presence and his impact will be the very thing that will cause people to engage to the extent that a better outcome happens in the not too distant future. So maybe we don't need him to shut up. Maybe we need him to rant and rave, you know, more.
Well, I took a different, perhaps more science-y approach to it.
Yeah.
What is something, and maybe, you know, who knows? Maybe they know something we don't know. I mean, I'm sure that freak Rick Wiles and the South African hustler, I'm sure that I don't know, somewhere along the way they were on Facebook and they saw a picture of a straight pin and a Cheeto, and decided that there were witches arrayed against, you know, Comrade Kumquat.
Well, that'd be more like voodoo, wouldn't it? Food voodoo.
Nah, it's all it's all the same, you know.
Junk food voodoo.
At least to them. And so, but behind that, you know, what sorts of things render someone speechless? Sort of permanently. Well, there's death. But if you're just rendering them mute, but they're still alive, doesn't that sound kind of strokey?
Yeah, I mean, that would be one way that muteness would occur. And depending on what side it affects and what side he writes with, one of the things that really pisses me off is that little episode that he's done initially where he's got the binder with the official document and he's sitting at the desk surrounded by people, and he does this great flourishy sort of signature, and then he holds it up like, look, I know the alphabet.
Look what I do'd. Yeah, because that's not I don't remember any other presidents doing that. I mean, that's,
well, hell, W didn't even do it.
Yeah, that's little Johnny. That's little Johnny bringing his crayon scrawl home and mommy proudly putting it on the refrigerator.
Yeah. And W, one of the things that he did a lot was signing statements. Well, this is a nonverbal signing statement. Well, maybe he's practicing to be silent. Who knows? Maybe if it plays out the way the witches are thinking, some of them, maybe all he will be able to do is sign something or put his X there and hold it up and show it to the world. Who the hell knows with this guy? I've stopped trying to second guess what's next. I really, truly have, because as my great-great Aunt Emma used to say, you'll set yourself crazy if you keep doing that.
Well, I mean, one thing in terms of second guessing, although this isn't really second guessing so much as prognosticating, I think, Scott. If the early responses are any indication, you know what stands between us and having the Affordable Care Act absolutely destroyed? And it's not inspiring, I might add.
Uh-huh.
A bunch of Freedom Caucus birther, deather, ninth or tenth or bircher, bagger eater, booger eater baggers and trumpansies squealing that this GOP care bill, and that's what I'm calling it, GOP care, because it's not Trump care. This isn't Trump's idea. I mean, he said we got to repeal and replace, but that was to, you know, that was to get the knuckle draggers and the mouth breathers to come along with him.
Yeah.
Everybody else was saying the same thing too. It was boilerplate. But this is, you know, this is 25 years of Republican economic thought. And so it's GOP care. And the only thing standing between us and it passing like shit through a goose is Rand Paul and Louie Gohmert and Steve King and Marsha Blackburn, goodness, and the loopy Freedom Caucus, who thinks that it's, and they're calling it this, Obamacare Light.
Yeah,
they think the poors are still getting too much stuff.
Well, anything is too much to these bastards, you know.
Yeah, well, it is, but I mean, that's one of those things that you kind of look at it and you go, oh, fuck, we're screwed.
Well, here's a double-headed what-if for you, okay? All right, let's see how to phrase this. Okay, what-if segment one. Okay, what if this is only what the GOP has put out there, what Trump supposedly has put out there, is only an opening bid, okay? And it will be a basis for further discussion.
Well, okay. I don't want to mess with your hypothesis, but let's get one thing. Let's be straight on one thing.
All right.
This is nothing that was introduced by the Trump administration.
Oh, no, I know.
This is entirely a creature of Paul Ryan and the economics of anarcho-randianism.
Yeah.
I mean, it's got all the same crap that he's been babbling about since he entered the Congress. It's got block grants. It's got, the list is too long, but it's, it gets rid of the individual mandate, and it gets rid of the medical devices tax, and it gets rid of everything that actually financially undergirded the Affordable Care Act that was necessary to make it work. Look, the giant welfare payment to insurance companies is in large part negatively affected, which was what made the insurance companies able to participate in the first place.
But stick with me, because I gave the preamble, but I didn't give the nut meat of the thing. Let us say, okay, that it stands as it currently does, okay? Let us also think back to the campaign season and take a hint from Donald Trump's musical interlude at most of his campaign rallies, the classic Rolling Stones song, "You Can't Always Get What You Want," okay?
Yeah.
And table that for a moment. Now, let's superimpose over that one of the other things that he said during his campaign over and over and over again is how nothing was getting done and things were broken and the swamp needed to be drained and I'm the man to do it. Okay. As a matter of fact, I believe he inferred that he's the only one that can do it. What if it turns out that what we end up with is something that makes people on both sides somewhat unhappy, but ends up being a better thing? And I don't know at this point how that will look or what will constitute that, okay, or even how it's possible. But let's just say that's awaiting us down the line, okay? Maybe part of his reasoning is, if he has reasoning at all, is to show the so-called Freedom Caucus up for the destructive, obstructionist fools that they are and say, you guys are not the solution. You guys are symptomatic of the problem, which is why for the past 8 years or more, important shit that needs to happen hasn't been happening. Now maybe I'm giving him...
Wait. Am I to understand that Trump's going to say this?
Well, I think that in his heart of hearts... That on some level is part of what might have motivated him. I'm not saying it was the biggest part, but that was an aspect of his overall motivation, possibly, okay? It could well be that the entire thing goes to shit and it never gets any better, okay? And we're all worse off now for
years. Yeah, but Scott, just to be the devil's advocate, what if he's just a pathological liar? What if all of that business about I won't touch Social Security and Medicare, Medicaid was just a goddamn lie to get the rubes to come along?
Well, there is always that. But then again...
I don't think there's just always that, Scott. I think that the great weight of evidence is on the side of that.
Yeah, but see, on its own, that doesn't do any good that he's a pathological liar because... You know, that would exist with nothing else around it. But fortunately, we have around it a media that has shaken off its stupor in a lot of good ways in recent weeks that's on the case.
You know, that CNN just hired a former Trump spokesman, right?
Well, you know, MSNBC hired Greta Van Susteren.
Who, by the way, I just noticed this earlier today because I saw her speaking on a panel over on that channel.
Yeah.
Listen to her sometime for as long as you can stand.
Yeah.
And tell me if you don't get the same vibe. She sounds like, I mean, she's got the female voice pitch, but she sounds shockingly in terms of meter and cadence and emphasis on syllables. She sounds like a female Chris Matthews. I'm not talking about content. I'm just talking about the way she speaks.
Okay, I'll look for that and listen to that.
It just kind of, because I had turned away and I was just hearing her voice. And I was like, that sounds like female Chris Matthews.
Does she spit on the guests and the panel members?
Well, no, neither has she talked about a tingle down her leg either, but, you know.
Well, she's new. Give her time.
Yeah,
but
right.
Anyway, don't let me leave the rest of my point hanging on this thing, because we have a media that, in good ways, has shaken off their stupor, and they're on the case. We've also got an energized public, okay, populist, disappointed Democratic and independent voters who are on the case, and we've also got the opposition, which is to say, the halfway decent Democrats and maybe one or two Republicans who are also on the case, who are not going to let this guy get away with anything if they can help it. So, like I say, it's my relentless optimism, I know, but I can't help but think, what is that old saying about your greatest fears and your highest hopes are seldom realized? Maybe there's a little of that to be found in what's ahead. I don't know. I'm just saying.
Well, maybe the Republicans will behave against type. But we've got Lisa Murkowski, Shelley Moore, Rob Portman from Ohio, and the guy from Colorado, the Republican whose name I can't remember. And they've all said, well, you know, we're certainly not going to support this in the Senate unless it guarantees the continuation of the Medicaid expansion. And I'm just a cynic.
Kasich, Governor.
No, no, no. I'm talking about the. No. It's not. He's a governor, not a senator.
Oh, but he was one of them that's concerned about the Medicaid part of it.
Well, right, because Ohio accepted the Medicaid. They accepted the free money, and so did West Virginia. And more people have gotten insurance for the first time in their lives in West Virginia under the Medicaid expansion than under any for-profit scheme. But the larger point here is that it's certainly got to take into account the Medicaid expansion. Well, lo and behold, the damn thing says, we're not going to touch the Medicaid expansion. We're just going to turn it all into block grants. And somebody with all the morals and ethics of Shelley Moore Capito will fold like a cheap suit. Oh well, you know they didn't take away the Medicaid expansion. They just took away the ability to get coverage because there will not be sufficient money. So, you know, that's the Democrats, except for maybe, you know, Joe Manchin, because he's a goddamn quisling, will be uniform in their opposition. But this first part of it, and it's being described as a 3 or 4 part process, this first part of it is going to go through on budget reconciliation, which means that filibusters are not possible.
Right.
Which means that if they get anywhere near a majority, it's done. It's done.
Well, the good thing about it, however it ends up, you've got Trump, a Republican in the White House. You've got the House run by the Republicans, the Senate run by the Republicans. They will own this thing, however it turns out, lock, stock, and barrel. And the 20 million people who have had health insurance, perhaps for the first time, okay, it's easier to keep something from somebody all along than it is to take it away once they've had it. And I think we agree on that. And you know, you got to remember the thing that motivates politicians is getting reelected. So what will it look like down the road if they not only own it, but have presented us with the proverbial shit sandwich? It's not going to look good for them. And some of the people for whom it's not going to look very good are going to be people who voted Trump in and have been voting these assholes in.
Okay. Okay, well, let me provide a counterpoint to that, Scott.
All right, you always do. I mean
I'm sorry. Well. I mean, it's kind of my job.
I know.
2020, he's running for re-election. And they say, yeah, but y'all took our health care away. And no, I never did. I never did. That wasn't me. I said we were going to keep health care, and everybody was going to be covered, and it was going to be more affordable. That's what I said. And they sent me a bill that didn't do that, and it took y'all's health care away, and I had no choice but to sign it.
Well,
re-elect me. And the Trump handsies will go, oh, okay.
Well, see, that assumes, Bob, that in 2020, sometime previous to that, Trump does not pull a Woodrow Wilson with no Edith Wilson in the wings to shield him from the world, okay?
And the odds are against that happening.
Well,
he has the finest health care to be had by any single human being on the planet.
Yeah, but does it cure tertiary syphilis? See, there is I don't know much about medicine, especially venereal disease, but I believe that there is a point of no return when it comes to that bad boy.
There certainly is. Or, you know, madness brought on by the hair regrowth drug that he takes.
Yeah. Or he could decide somewhere along the way, well, fuck it, I don't want to do this anymore. I mean, it wouldn't be the first time that he's done something like that.
Yeah, but he gets off on the power. I mean, yeah, I'm just trying to be a cold realist about this. I mean, and not to just keep beating on the same point over and over and over again, but I need some sort of validation that people understand we are not taking the Senate in 2018.
Well, either we will or we won't. And I understand the reasons why you say we won't. And there is something to be said for some of the reasons for why we could or might or may.
So, Heller in Nevada, and Texans are going to rise up and replace Ted Cruz with a Democrat. And Tennesseans are going to replace Bob Corker with whatever Democrat that moribund party can nominate. And
well, by 2020, we don't
Mississippi.
Know where things will be. And you know how people are, Bob, especially voters, especially disappointed voters. I mean, just because it's not apparent now doesn't mean that, you know, not now doesn't mean not never. And yeah, maybe we won't take the Senate in 2020. And yeah, well, maybe we
18.
Won't take the House in 28. Well, you said 2020 earlier.
No, I was talking about 2020 when he runs for president.
Okay.
2018 is the Senate.
All right, well, maybe we won't take the Senate in 2018, and maybe we won't take the House in 2018, and maybe Trump will be in fine form, okay, through the magic of medicine by 2020, and he'll go out for four more years. Maybe so. But I'm saying that there's always the possibility that something will change in a dramatic way that will throw a wrench into the not-so-rosy projections that you make. I'm not saying that it will. I'm just saying that anything's possible. Hell, a year ago, none of us thought that Trump could win, honestly, in our heart of hearts. I didn't.
One of us predicted it.
I don't think you did that long ago, a year ago. I mean, would you have bet real money a year ago that Trump was going to be the next president? I don't know anybody that would have placed that bet.
March of 2016, yeah, I'd have placed that bet.
Well, hell, as of election night, Trump didn't even think he was going to win, by all the reports that I've heard. And you're a hell of a lot more bright than he is. Well, anyway, that's neither here nor there, and I'm getting all worked up here.
Well, and don't. But, I mean, Steve in New York says, I completely appreciate Scott's optimism. However, what evidence is there, and I think this is a valid question, Scott, what evidence is there that the people have held any GOPer in the past to account?
Well, how far back do you want to go? Who was the guy that sent you the email, the guy from Parts Unknown?
Well, just now, that note comes from Steve in New York.
No, the guy before.
Oh, Paul from Parts Unknown.
Okay, Paul. I kept thinking it was George. I knew it was one of the Beatles. But anyway, who saw it when Herbert Hoover was president and the Depression happened, who saw that Roosevelt would win and that we wouldn't have another Republican-controlled Congress for, what was it, 25 years? Or at least one of the houses.
Yeah, I mean, the Great Depression did that.
Yeah.
Because it was a crisis of mammoth proportions.
I get what Steve is saying about optimism, But on some level, the very optimism by its very nature does not bring concrete stuff into it. Sometimes you have to imagine a future based on little more than it being the way you would like for things to occur.
Visualize whirled peas?
Well, no, I won't go that far. I've never did like peas. Only with mashed potatoes, because then you can eat them with a knife. But that's another story for another time.
I like the crunchy little pop, but that's me.
Well, yeah. Now, do you like the big fat peas or the little sweet peas?
Peas are peas to me.
Yeah, but they're two different types. Some of them, I think they're called baby peas.
I like the sugar snap peas. I like those. Yeah. So-called English peas. I like those.
See, I just don't want to fall in the trap of defining our future based on the past, because I can see the value of that to an extent. You know, the past should inform the future, but each moment should be freely chosen. I mean, you create the future from nothing, because
each moment is freely what it is.
Yeah, if you create the future from something, if you're not creating the future from nothing, you're then creating the future by simply rearranging the current something. And that, to me, is the gist of the matter. You know, if you always do what you've always done, you'll always get what you always got. I think it was Zig Ziglar, the entrepreneur, who said that. And there's some truth to that. It all comes down to me, optimism notwithstanding, to behaving in a manner that's consistent with the future that I want to be part of, okay? And what is it, like 20%? If 20% of the people behave in a manner that's consistent with the future that they'd like to have happen, a tipping point occurs where it becomes more probable that that's what will occur. I think that's scientifically based. I think historically and scientifically there is some basis for that. But if we keep doing, if 98% of our time is devoted to saying, this is the problem, this is the problem, this is the problem, this is the problem, and only 2% is in terms of what solutions might be, then we'll continue to have a future that looks like the present and maybe even parts of the past. That's all I'm saying, you know. Does that make sense at all, or am I just...
Well, yeah, it does. I think I just... I have a... you know, there's that old line about, you know, scratch a pessimist and you'll find a broken-hearted romantic or optimist or whatever. And that's me. I mean, I just... But look, I remember when he started Bush War I, and I said, oh, Jesus, we're going to be stuck with George H.W. Bush for 8 fucking years. Everybody loves this stupid son of a bitch. And he was gone by 1992. And we got Bill. On the other hand, you can ask any number of people, and they'll tell you that Bill Clinton was, you know, got into office because he entered into an unholy alliance and corporatized the Democratic Party.
Well, a lot of what he did was he changed the message. He was being very undemocratic in his pronouncements, which a lot of people bought into, but it wasn't being democratic. It was being it was a matter of expediency, if anything. And Hillary, in my estimation, didn't fall too far from that tree. I heard people say, well, she's way more liberal than Bill was. Well,
no, one of the things that was frustrating was her insistence on that incremental pragmatism, when many of us made the argument that, you know, we need serious change right now. But then again, you know, I'll note that I supported Bernie vociferously. There's an archive of me supporting Bernie for months on end. But I also pointed out along the way that even Bernie said, this is a long shot campaign.
Yeah.
And he got hogtied by the Southern primaries because it created that aura of invincibility and it created what was referred to as her firewall.
And you were correct when you noted back then that none of those Southern states were going to be voting for her in the general. And lo and behold, they didn't.
Right. So, I joke about the eight ball with the cracked plate and the answer hazy ask again later. No one knows what the future will bring. But we make prognostication, we make hypotheses, we make educated guesses based upon what's gone before and what the, look, if the market crashed, maybe they'd take it out on Trump. I don't know. I think one of the things that has to happen is that somewhere along the way, there's a coming together and a recognition of the existential crisis we face.
Well, somewhere in the equation, Bob, there's got to be room for people desiring and behaving in a manner consistent with that desire. A shift occurring are going to have some part to play in the shift occurring.
And I have a very, very dim view of Trumpansies ever changing their minds.
No, I'm not talking about Trumpansies. I'm talking about the Democrats who are solid, okay? And I'm talking about some percentage of the people who for years after one another couldn't be bothered to show up to be part of the process. And maybe a couple of independents and maybe a couple of disgruntled Republicans. It's going to take a coalition of that sort. But the gist of it is going to be, the nub of it is going to be, the fact that these will be people who are dedicated to a shift occurring, and by way of their dedication and how that shows up in practice are going to cause the shift to occur. And maybe I'm just, you know, whistling past the graveyard. Certainly something's got to happen. And I would prefer an outcome that's more rosy than not. And maybe the only outcome is going to be
okay,
more of the same.
All right. I'm perfectly willing to work within that paradigm. But let me ask you, what happens if I'm right? Where is your head if I'm right?
Where is my head?
I mean, what happens in your existential space if in fact the Republicans do get away with wrecking health care for 38 million people, which, by the way, Paul Ryan called a bogus number. Bogus.
Well, it may be where I was. It may very well be similar to where I was in 2004 after the first 4 years of W, when, as bad as Kerry was, John Kerry was, as the Democratic candidate, I thought, well, you know, maybe people have had enough of this guy Bush and will change courses. Well, after November of 2004, we found out that people hadn't had enough, at least in terms of electing a different president. You know, maybe if it all comes to pass as you're suggesting, maybe it'll be symptomatic of people not having had enough. Maybe we're slow learners. Maybe that's what the problem is.
Or maybe things like Citizens United allow the well to be perpetually poisoned now. I mean, that was a substantial change to our reality, Scott.
But what's the point of showing up then if all is lost?
I'm not saying all's lost.
Well, you.
I don't want people whistling, marching to Pretoria, into bayonets. I mean, for instance, the difference in the Senate versus the House in 2018, and let's be clear, 2018. There's really no, with the exception, okay, there's, again, 23 Democrats and, well, okay, 22 Democrats, Joe Manchin, and two independents, Angus King and Bernie Sanders, up for re-election on our side. Obviously, we've got to hang on to those seats to even have a fighting chance. But to pour energy into thinking you're going to beat Ted Cruz or whoever's running in Arizona or the guy in Nebraska or the guy in Mississippi or the guy, or Luther Strange, an unforgettable name, big Luther Strange in Alabama or Corker in Tennessee. Those are largely exercises in futility to my mind. So that means in a world of limited resources, and this is what I've said time and time again, the effort in 2018 must be in the House, and it must be extremely granular. You're not going to unseat Louis Gohmert, for instance, or Steve King, or Marsha Blackburn, or any of the other manifest goddamn weirdos.
So maybe the battleground is elsewhere in 2018 for the House.
That's what I'm saying. It has to be extremely granular. You've got to find 30 or 40 House seats where you think that the guy is vulnerable or woman.
Do you think Tom Perez is up for that and would be better at it than, what's his name, the congressman from Minnesota?
Yeah, I think he's up for it. The question is, will people coalesce around him? And right now, there's a hell of a lot of bitterness over. You know, we can find any. Our side can get bitter over anything. Our side can get bitter over chocolate versus vanilla.
Yeah.
Okay. God damn you neoliberal corporate establishment piece of shit chocolate. I mean, it's there.
Well, see, at that point, I would ask, well, how's bitterness working out for you so far? And if the answer isn't a heartfelt, beautifully, I mean, unbelievably beautifully, then bitterness is not the solution here.
And good luck. I mean, I agree with you, but good luck. But all I'm trying to say is that it's not all is lost. But we need to be extremely well focused if we are to be a legitimate resistance.
But see, you kind of said that a little while ago with your comment about Citizens United permanently poisoning the landscape, okay? Because then if that is so, then there is nothing to be done. I say that that's not accurate. I say that there is something to be done, but it will be a matter of circumventing the impact of Citizens United. And part of how that shows up is an enlistment of good Democrats who have their head on straight, disgruntled Republicans, disgruntled independents, and motivating some good portion of people who up until now couldn't be bothered.
Yeah, well, getting the 48% off their ass.
And focusing all these folks in those areas that you just talked about where the race has to be granular. It's not impossible. It's not insurmountable. We've done versions of it in the past. It's just a matter of getting it done and being so relentless in the getting of it that we will not take no for an answer.
Right. I mean, and just an example. So you'll so they're going to have a special election in South Carolina, if I understand correctly. And the special election in South Carolina is going to be to replace Mick Mulvaney, who is now the director of the Office of Management and Budget, the guy who's been out front in front of the cameras talking about how gosh darn star-spangled awesome GOP care is going to be. Well, he left an empty seat in South Carolina. And this is going to, when I say this is going to drive people crazy. Our good friend Eric Bjorn pointed this out. Guess who the Democrat who's going to run for that seat is?
Don't know.
A guy whose employment history includes being a lawyer for Exxon and Goldman Sachs.
Well, that won't help.
And, of course, he's running in South Carolina. So, you know.
What do you know about this race in Montana? There's a guy that joined the cabinet or a high up muckety-muck who was a House member from Montana, the sole House member from Montana.
Yeah, represents and, 15 people and 3 million cattle, yes.
Yeah, but isn't that one of the seats that could be in play because... Montana, as I understand it, one of their senators is a Democrat, maybe not a great Democrat, but he's a Democrat nonetheless. Isn't it possible that that could be a good seat for us in the short term?
Sure, and that's what I'm talking about when I say it's got to be the approach has got to be granular. You can't just scattershot this thing.
Yeah.
You've got to find you pick some battles and you also make some high profile fights. As much as I despise him, there's that wonderful scene in Braveheart where somebody asks Mel Gibson, "Where are you gone?" And he says, "I'm gone to pick a fight." Well, look, Jason Chaffetz went on TV yesterday. Jason Chaffetz from Utah, who had a screaming room full of people he swore were paid protesters and not really his constituents.
Yeah, I remember that.
went on TV yesterday and said, "Listen, you know, people just need to decide whether they want health care or an iPhone." Now, meanwhile, this son of a bitch, verified through Federal Election Commission filings, has used political donations to pay his goddamn cell phone bill.
Yeah, I posted that. I don't know if you saw it on the internet, but that's where I got. I mean, on my Facebook, but.
He's one you pick a fight with.
Yeah.
And it's all predicated on having a viable candidate. But and you asked about Tom Perez. Get behind, because see, there's this sort of I don't want to be sexist, but there's this like gentleman's agreement that the other side doesn't go after important members. And of course the Republicans violated that years ago. But as was told to me when I was in Washington, D.C. last, we got a lot of people in the Democratic caucuses on both sides of the Capitol who are still playing by rules that no longer apply.
Right.
You go after and you support the candidate with as much as you can. You go after Jason Chaffetz. This asshat, Devin Nunes from the 22nd District of California. You find a good candidate and you go after his ass. Well, you people just take Trump literally. Well, how the hell else are we supposed to take him? God damn it!
Well, and that is a valid point. And I think Harry Truman did it in 1948 when he exhorted everybody and campaigned in such a way as to make Republicans back then run on their record. Was it? Well, 48, I'm pretty sure, was the year, because that's really the only year that Truman ran.
Yeah.
And that's part of, that's also part, it's a very intricate equation, but it's doable. There's a lot of different moving parts, but I think we are up to making that machine work, because we know that in other ways, in other times, it has worked in a similar way. It's just a matter of deciding that that's the best way to go, and then enlisting people who
yeah,
are
and,
willing.
And beyond those high-profile people, there's this noob who replaced Mike Pompeo in Kansas, and he needs focused on. This is the son of a bitch who said in regard to providing health care to the working poor via the Medicaid expansion, well, you know, it's like Jesus said, the poor you have always with you, and they don't really care about their health care, and homeless people don't really want health care. They don't care about health care, and these Medicaid people, they're just getting health care on a credit card, and they don't really care what they spend or what they cost us. That son of a bitch, and by the way, he's an MD physician, needs to go down. He needs,
well,
but the problem, and you know, I'm not trying to be a negative Nelly. You got to have viable candidates first.
Yeah, but Kansas is a perfect example of a place where change needs to occur after Brownback. Okay, I have friends who still live in Kansas. And I used to live across the line in Missouri during all of the 80s, most of the 80s. And that place has turned into a veritable shithole in a lot of ways. So that is a place that's ripe for change. That's a lab experiment for exactly what you're proposing.
But beyond that, You've got to find, and I'm not the guy to do it. It's things that maybe people, in the Horn community could do who are more data intensive. But you've got to find Republicans in blue states, and you got to beat their ass. And that may be hard to do, but I mean, there are Republicans in New York. Blue state. There are Republicans in, well, used to be a blue state, Pennsylvania. Hell, there are Republicans in California. There's Dave Reichert in Washington, who used to be the sheriff of King County, and how that guy's got a congressional seat just plumb flummoxes me. But it's got to be. A concerted, targeted, very, very narrow effort. Scott, I'm gonna roll here though, because I got other folks wanting in, a bunch of email to share. But
okay,
you know, I appreciate your optimism, and I'm not just trying to pee on your Wheaties for the sake of peeing on your Wheaties. But all I can say is. You know, what was it? Was it Clausewitz, Napoleon, who said, you know, maybe it was Sun Tzu, who said, you have to know who your enemy is before you fight.
Yeah, and I get that. I don't mean to discount the definition of what the problem is.
So, you know, I don't think we disagree that much. You just have a little bit more sunny disposition, I think, and maybe I'd have one if I had a cockatiel.
Well, there have been those moments when I've wanted to get rid of him. How many stamps would it take to mail him? All right, Bob.
What'd the chicken do? Yeah, I know. Take it easy, Scott.
All right, I'll see you.
Bye now. Our buddy Scott calling from San Diego. And let me remind folks, 20 minutes before the hour, we got $50 to go. We got $10 to go to meet Chris's We Love Shirley challenge. And we got a $50 challenge on the table, courtesy of Paul from Parts Unknown. And if we meet that, we have caught completely up with the deficit, the backlog, whatever you want to call it, and we go forward just with, you know, regular days. Let's see if the let's see if the stress line's working, and head over to Pennsylvania. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's John from Central PA.
Hey, John, how you doing?
I'm good. How you doing?
I'm hanging in there.
Would you mind if I called you back on the regular line?
No, not at all. Not at all. That it's a problem sometimes. Yeah, call me right back.
Okay.
Bye.
All right.
Yeah, like I said, the stress line works for some, not for others. So we'll just wait till John jumps in. And along the way, I'll share a couple of notes, too. James says, you're so narrow-minded, Bob. Think red, raspberry, not chocolate or vanilla. meanwhile, capitalism is the final solution, courtesy of Steve in China. It gives health care to those who hardly use it. It gives nothing to those who need it. It is more free money to those who are rich enough to pay for anything. Not so difficult to understand, really. Fascism is an ongoing project, you know. Ready to fight for your very life? And Steve continues, subject line, health insurance as death assurance. To whom it may concern, it's not about any number of people who can't afford it. It's about specific groups who need it most. That's what socialized medicine is about. It's what America doesn't have. And that's one other thing that is worth noting. I watched enough for-profit media today to get the tenor of the discussion. And I heard somebody on MSNBC, maybe it was Savannah Guthrie, saying, the American people are saying they want, and maybe it wasn't MSNBC, maybe it wasn't Savannah Guthrie, but somebody said, what the American people are saying is they want a bipartisan fix for this. Well, that's going to be kind of hard to come by. When one half of the bipartisanship is saying it has as its operating philosophy, die, you worthless poor motherfuckers. But what you don't hear, or what I haven't heard, you tell me if you have. There's all kinds of talk about what's in this godforsaken GOP care bill, GOP care. But nobody seems to want to address the basic, central, essential fact. And that is, we can sit and try to tinker with the for-profit healthcare insurance system until hell freezes over. And, to quote Mayeller Ewell, it don't come to nothing, Mr. Finch. It don't come to nothing. Because, as Steve points out, the answer is universal single-payer health care. But whether it be MSNBC or CNN or any of the others, the only way they know how to talk about that is to say, yeah, and people die in the hallways in Canada waiting for necessary heart surgery. Which, of course, is a goddamn lie. But it doesn't slow them down any. And so, you know, maybe that's one way of approaching this. We've got to have a conversation about universal single-payer health care. John Conyers used to introduce Medicare for All every session of Congress. And I don't know. I went looking, but I didn't have enough time and I didn't find it. Has he introduced Medicare for All yet in this Congress? Because that's the real alternative. And once again, I heard Randy Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, saying, Medicare's going broke. Social Security's going broke.
And once again, whoever the talking heads were did not say, you goddamn liar. Because, see, that's a goddamn lie. Social Security's not going broke. It can be fixed and made sound into the next century. Medicare has problems. But it's because it's underfunded. It's dying of neglect. But I guess that's just too much. That's too much for the for-profit media to be able to comprehend. Another note coming from Steve in China about my conversation with Scott. Regarding this conversation, even rosy optimism is fine, but you got to scrape the dung off the lenses sometimes. Voltaire's Candide talks of the best of all possible worlds, but isn't that just another way to talk about pragmatic futures when you're just a little better off than the next guy? Toothaches and armchair philosophy don't mix well. I will not argue that point. Jason points out, viable candidates or not, Democrats need to show up to every election, every cycle. May take two or three cycles, but many of these races are winnable with a little tenacity. And a little money. I mean, it costs something on the order of nearly $2,000 to file to run for a seat in the House. A lot more than that to run for Senate. And look, you know, that's a bar to candidacy right there. But I believe in not leaving elections blank. And in my world, you know, you can't have an upset unless you've got somebody on the other side of the ballot. Even if it's in a seat like James Sensenbrenner's in Wisconsin, where he is as safe as any member of the House can be. Or Louis Gohmert, or Steve King. It starts with a loyal opposition, so Jason, I agree with you. Now, enough of that. Let's run over now and talk to John in Central PA. Hey, John.
Hey, Bob. I can hear you now real good.
Good.
Yeah, I actually wanted to talk about the, and I know people are probably tired of hearing about it, but the so-called joint address thing. First of all, it's in regards to the media. I think I wish more people would realize that the media is absolutely the reason why we have this guy as president. They are probably the biggest reason why. And here's a perfect little example. Back in the primary season, Hillary Clinton, Trump, and Bernie all came to Pennsylvania right before we voted in the primaries, April of last year, to the tri-county area, which is Adams County, York County, and Lancaster County. Trump was in Harrisburg. Hillary Clinton was in York, and Bernie was in Lancaster right around the same time. Trump and Bernie had about the same size rally. Same amount of people or so. Trump's was more, a little more, because he was the venue he was at could hold a lot more people. But Bernie's was at Noblesville University, and you can only hold so many people in their gym. But there was a line going all the way down three blocks, you know, wrapped around campus and down three blocks. I mean, there was a lot of people there. And here's a little bit of trivia for you. Guess which rally the for-profit media was at, and this included MSNBC, CNN, Fox, and ABC.
Trump's?
Yep. They did not show up to any other either Clinton's or Bernie's, even though Bernie's was very large, too.
Right, and Hillary probably held her rally in a phone booth.
Yeah, right, exactly. They showed up to that. The other day, they didn't show up to the Women's March. There was a few journalist outlets there. on the 21st. The other day they had a March for Trump, you know, thing around the country where there was like
March for Trump. Yeah, yeah, March the 4th. Yeah, I saw the photographs. There were huge crowds of, you know, 10 and 15 people.
Right. And well, you can, you better believe they were out for that. You know, they, for some reason, they're coddling and bending over backwards for the Trump supporters. I'm still waiting to see them interview one Hillary Clinton supporter or Bernie supporter or anybody on our side that wants to, you know, voice our grievances. But, you know, they keep talking about how forgotten the Trump voter is. They aren't forgotten at all.
They got all the coverage.
Yeah. We're the ones that are forgotten, and the media is doing this. And here's another thing, too. They keep saying that the Democratic Party lost touch with the working class. What about that that repeal the other day where that went through the Senate where they repealed some regulation that the Obama administration had on federal contractors
not being able to kill their own workers with impunity? Yeah.
Yeah, and actually pay them right. Well, the Republicans all voted – well, not all of them voted for it, the repeal, but most of them. And all the Democrats voted against it, and that includes Joe Manchin, I believe, too. And you don't hear about that.
And the problem is – and this goes back to the so-called Reagan Democrats, John. People will believe – absolute, unmitigated, fly-covered bullshit. Like the idea that the Republicans care about working people. Okay, yeah. So Donald Trump's going to reinvigorate manufacturing, and there's going to be millions and millions of new manufacturing jobs. And they're all going to be at $9 an hour. Yay.
Yeah, exactly. And well, you know that Boeing and GM announced that they're laying off a bunch of work, about a bunch of, you know, jobs. I think that was just this week or last week they announced that. Both those companies did. You don't hear a peep from him because he's too worried about, you know, the Kenyan Muslim wiretapping his phone lines. I mean, what the fuck does it take to get this country to wake up and realize that we're in some serious shit right now because we have a unhinged, completely out of his mind lunatic that is wielding probably the most power that
surrounded by real sycophants.
Yeah, really though, you know.
I mean, General John Kelly, one of his awesome, tremendous generals, came out in the face of the allegation that Barack Obama, who was described as livid but short of furious, I read that earlier today, John. Barack Obama was livid but short of furious over what Trump said about alleging that he wiretapped Trump Tower. And of course, even in retirement, even as an ex-president, Barack Obama cannot get furious because then he would be an angry black man. But John Kelly comes out and says, well, you know, he wouldn't just say something. Well, yes, he would.
Wow.
Yes, he absolutely would.
Wow.
At the White House press briefing today, there was a moment of high comedy when just forgetting his brain existed. Spicer, getting all snarky and sarcastic, asked the press pool if Comrade Kumquat should answer wiretap questions. And almost to a person, the entire room said, "Well, yeah."
Oh, really?
And so when every hand in the room went up, he said, "I appreciate it. I'd be glad to ask the president, share your request with him, and see what we can do on the schedule. But you know that he's very busy these days. He's done a lot of photo sprays, and he'll continue to interact with you guys. But I'd be glad to make your request known."
Wow. Which means it's never going to happen. He's not going to answer any questions about it.
No, because the entire entire purpose of that little twoop storm was to take heat off of Jeff Sessions, you know, who perjured himself in front of the Senate.
Do you mean lock her up, Jeff Sessions?
Yeah, that one. Kept saying... yeah, that one.
Well,
exactly.
It's like, well, I guess he was mad because that whole Jeff Sessions thing's kind of pissed in the Wheaties of his glorious glorious coherent joint address that he made, where the media absolutely fell for that shit. And what happened was, and this is kind of what I originally wanted to call about, because I know we're right up against the top of the hour, but I wanted to say that I was disgusted, man. I mean, the next day I just wanted to go insane. I mean, I couldn't believe what I was hearing from some of the, you know, the media people, like Katie Turr saying that was presidential with a capital P, him exploiting that poor woman. You remember Katie Turr, the woman who had to be escorted out of more than one of his hate rallies, because he singled her out and kind of sicked his people on her.
His brown church,
Katie Turr, you know, yeah, exactly. And then she turns around and says that, you know, that he's presidential. I guess she has a really short memory because she doesn't remember being so terrified about because of him. Because I guess that might have been a little bit presidential to her. You know, it's they fell for that, and all it really served was to delegitimize the media more, and here's why. Because
Trump was presidential because he was white and didn't pick his teeth with his own toenail clippings. Barack Obama was never presidential, you know, because black.
Exactly. This whole repeal and replace thing is all comes back to their blind hatred for Barack Obama. That's all it is.
Oh yeah, and when somebody called it Trump care earlier, Kellyanne Conway about had a fit. She said, he never wants his name on a health care bill. Well, you know what? They didn't put Obamacare on the bill either. It was just a bunch of godforsaken Republicans that hung that around Barack Obama's neck. The American Health Care Act, and I think it's aptly named for this reason. It wants to cover it, wants everyone to have access to coverage, and that is something that didn't happen under Obamacare. I'll call it Trump Care if you want to, but I didn't hear President Trump say to any of us, I want my name on that. It's not about branding according to someone's name. This is serious business. So it turns out that this goddamn nightmare is the one thing in the world Donald Trump doesn't want to stick his filthy name on.
Isn't that ironic?
Yeah. And by the way, there's a magic word in there. It wants everyone to have access to coverage. Okay? See, let's understand something, John. I've got access to a Lamborghini. I've got access to a Gulfstream 5. I've got access to a 60-foot yacht. But that access is meaningless unless I have the cash with which to buy it. And so every time, just you and everybody else, not that I'm giving orders or anything, every time you hear the word access, we all scream, bullshit. And John, I got to get out of here because we're right on top of the hour.
Okay. Yep.
All right. We'll talk more later, John. Take care.
Okay.
Bye now.
Yep. You too.
John calling from Central PA. It is time to get out of here. Thanks going out to David. Thank you, David, very kindly. David finished off the and thank you, by the way, to Paul earlier as well. Thank you, Paul. David finished off the We Love Shirley challenge and got us started $5 toward the toward Paul from Parts Unknown's challenge. So we got $45 to go with that. That having been said, thank you, Steve from Georgistan, for being our utility pinch hit prayer meeting Wednesday, official chat room moderator. Thank you very kindly to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And yes, always, 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 Chena, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.